now mean the greatest mystic
Good
of our...
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of the Higher Dimensions. I am your hostess, Phyllis Pricer, and welcome to our show. This evening we have a lovely young lady, an author, who has written a wonderful book about practicing consciousness, living and dying, Anna Maria Hemingway. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Anna Maria did a study on near-death experiences and the expansion of awareness and how near-death experiences help us to appreciate and come alive and become more aware of who and what we are doing on this earth and many other wonderful ideas and how consciousness lives beyond our mortal life. And I am so glad to have you here, and I'd like you to give people a little bit about your background and who you are and how you came to write this wonderful, wonderful book.
Well, that's a tall order in a few minutes, but I guess as far as writing the book is concerned, I, as all people do sooner or later, had to deal with the fact that my mother was in the dying process.
Mm-hmm.
After a long illness, it mm-hmm. was apparent she was not going to make a recovery, and that I realized that this was a very sacred journey, the journey of her transition, and that I wanted to actually be with her as consciously as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in modern day society, we tend to view death as the ultimate failure now,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
rather than part of the natural cycle of life. So when we're faced with having to deal with the enormity of someone close dying, we don't have many resources.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I wrote this book after my own experiences was to try and give people information and perhaps a different way of viewing the dying process, and also
mm-hmm.
to realize that although we do go through, you know, terrible grief and
mm-hmm.
suffering and loss,
mm-hmm.
there is something else that happens, and that something else can be very profound, very beautiful,
mm-hmm.
and very empowering.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But this is a wonderful journey that you made, and it is a wonderful gift that I think the two of you gave to each other in that last phase of your joint life here together on Earth. And that is one of the most remarkable stories that one could go on this journey towards the end of the life of a parent and be with her in order to ensure that her transition was a lovely place to be, both of you. And I know that touched your soul a great deal in many, many ways. And as you say, this book immortalizes that wonderful togetherness for the two of you. And in it, you came across other people and who had this gift of sharing the life of those who meant something very special in their life, whether it was friends or children or parents. And I'd like you to go on and tell us a little bit more about it. And yes, you're welcome to call in and share this evening. And if anyone has a story to tell, we'd love to hear it. And the caller who called in just before we went on the air, we're certainly welcome to having you call in as well. So please tell us a little bit more about this wonderful journey that you went on.
Well, after my mother's death, I realized that I wanted to do something with the experience, something
mm-hmm.
that was authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to collect similar stories of people
mm-hmm.
that had had something to do with the dying process
mm-hmm.
and had had a transformative experience.
Mm-hmm.
So the first section of the book gives a history and information about the near-death experience,
mm-hmm.
which perhaps is the nearest thing we can get to sort of thinking about the possibility of what might
mm-hmm.
happen at the
mm-hmm.
moment that physical life
mm-hmm.
ends in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And five stories of people, including Larry Hagman, I think most people are familiar with,
mm-hmm.
who
mm-hmm.
showed
Dallas.
Yes.
He was on Dallas, the case, and he was wondering about that, and the name doesn't ring a fast bell.
Okay. Who illustrate that material possessions, certainly in his case, didn't quell his quest to know the meaning of life. And in his own near-death experience, he came to a whole different level of understanding what it means to live life consciously and well. And I think that this idea that the near-death experiences survivors come back and tell us is always the same story. They change their outlook on life, the way they view life, and they normally come back with a very different set of values. So the first section of the book is about near-death experiences. The second section is about what it actually means to lose somebody or be in the dying process with someone, but actually have a transformative experience. So these stories are people who have been either lost a loved one or been engaged with somebody in the dying process and have gone on to do, you know, incredible things out in the world. So this same sort of transformation takes place, and I think that through the stories that I've gathered and my own experience, a psychic sensitivity is activated in the dying process. It shakes us out of our complacency, and at the same time, it transcends perhaps the way we normally view the world and what's going on around us, and takes us to a different level.
Absolutely.
So these stories are about people who've had that sort of experience. One of them is a lady who lost her son in 9/11 and then went off to build a school in Afghanistan, which at the time would have seemed extraordinary to her to have done this, but nevertheless she did, and she's made a great difference not only to the lives of the children that she has helped, but her son lives on now.
Absolutely, in that kind of charity. We have a caller. Welcome to the show.
Hello, could you please tell me the title of the book?
Yes, I'm sorry. Let's go over it again. Practicing Consciousness, Living and Dying.
Well, it's actually Practicing Conscious Living
and Dying. That's what I thought
I
said. Practicing Conscious Living and Dying.
Yeah.
Okay, you're right. I read it incorrectly.
It's published by O Books, and it's available from any good bookstore or Amazon.com or many online book retailers.
Thank you. And also, Larry Hagman, I didn't know he had a near-death experience. Could you tell me about it?
Well, Larry Hagman had two experiences that contained elements of the near-death experience. One was when he was, he had a liver transplant a few years ago, and as he hovered in that place between life and death, he had an experience of great profound insight for him, which was to do, again, with this sense of connectedness, what's important in life, and it's sort of too long to describe his whole experience, but it had a very profound effect on him, and he does a lot of charitable work now, much for the Transplant Organ Association.
That's interesting.
After having received what he calls a second chance at life, he encourages people to be the Good Samaritan and give someone else that same chance. And I think the important thing here is that, you know, while life continues, it's to be lived. It's not a question of, oh, we want to leave this life because there's something better. It's living this life consciously and well in that awareness that death is a part of this natural life cycle. So Larry Hagman struggled for a long time. Despite his wealth and success as an actor, he had an emptiness that he needed to fill. He wanted to understand the true meaning of life, and his experiences actually gave him a deeper understanding.
That's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Does that answer the question for you?
And also, did he see his mother when he crossed? Did he cross over, like, actually on the other side? Did he cross over? Was he actually on the other side? Did he, like, they say when you'll see your loved ones. Did he see his mother when he had that near-death experience?
He saw his grandmother, actually. It was his grandmother that he actually saw. And this is a very common thing in near-death experience, and
mm-hmm.
also end-of-life or end-of-deathbed visions, when a deceased relative or friend may appear at that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
Some people who have an NDE are met by relatives or, you know, a deceased loved one. Or it could be someone they don't know, but Larry's case, it was his grandmother.
Okay, and do you see any spirits around me? Do you feel any spirits around me?
Well, probably Phyllis would be the one to answer that question.
Well,
you.
We always have those around us, okay, what we call guardian angels. Those are always around us. With whom are we speaking, by the way?
My name is Elaine.
Pardon? Elaine?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Well, you know that your mother is with you. We do know that. And, again, there is a grieving process to go through. But understand that once that divide is passed, it's as though the people are no longer in pain and no longer suffering, and are happy and wish to move on in their afterlife, because it's they do come and visit with us a lot, but they have other things to do as well. They have lessons to learn and healing situations to go through, and growth situations, because we are always growing. Simply because we've left this life doesn't mean we are standing around playing harps at all. What we are doing is continuing to grow and becoming the most integrated soul we can be. And life is just one of those journeys in which we enter into from time to time in order to stimulate growth on multiple planes. So, yes, of course, your mother, and there are other family members around you as well, my dear.
Could I have prevented her passing if I had her treated for low thyroid? Could I have prevented her
no,
passing?
No, there's nothing you could have done, honey. It was her time to go. It's as simple as that. You can wish all you want that she didn't leave, but the point of the fact is, when people are ready to go, they will go. Do you understand? When their time is now, then they go, and you cannot hold on to them. You cannot hold them back, to be honest with you.
I keep thinking if I had done more, like...
You're not hearing me. When it's time to go, they leave. If it was not her time to go, she'd still be with you. It was a choice that she made at the time.
But, like, if I was able to prevent her from having this role...
Honey, it's not you. The story of her passing was not about you.
Mm-hmm.
It was about her and her desire to continue on with her life in another level.
Because I keep thinking, if I did this, if I did that, like, maybe I could have prevented it.
Yeah, I understand, dear. But the point of the fact is, she had a beautiful life, and you had a beautiful life. And you loving her means also sometimes letting go and getting on with your life, because she wouldn't want you to stay behind and stay stuck in time, which, when you don't move forward and release people, you end up being stuck in time instead of moving forward and growing the way you're supposed to.
In other words, it's not my fault. It's not that I fail to do anything.
Again, I have to say, honey, it wouldn't have mattered what you did. It doesn't matter what you did or didn't do. It was her time. It's as simple as that.
Okay.
Okay?
And can she hear me when I talk with her?
Pardon?
Can she hear me when I talk to her?
Absolutely, dear. And again, you know, there's grief counseling that is very good, that is a possibility to go, which you might want to look into again. because this helps you to move on as well, dear.
Well, you know what I like to read a lot of books about? After-death communication. I find that comforting.
Well, then that is what you should do.
After-death communication.
Okay, honey.
Book, Practicing Consciousness, Living and Dying.
Yes.
Who's the author of that book?
Anna Maria Hemingway.
Anna Maria?
Yes.
Anna Maria.
What
was the last name?
Hemingway, as in the writer, Hemingway.
Hemingway.
Okay, hon?
Okay, and there's after-death communications in there about...
You will love the stories. They will touch your heart, my dear.
Okay? Thank you so much.
You're welcome, dear. God bless. Take care. Okay, go on, Anna Maria.
Yeah, I think that the caller was, you know, touching a very important point here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our emotional needs, of course, of loss and grief are sometimes so overpowering.
Mm-hmm.
I think that sometimes it can help us if we stop thinking of time as we imagine it to be, but rather as an eternal time in which things are forever moving forward, as you say.
And I
think another very important part here, which I covered in the last part section of the book regarding after-death communication, is that, you know, we do often have certainly communication from people close to us that have left. And it's very often people tend to ignore these subtle little signs that actually, you know, tell us that the person is still around us and with us. And I think that after-death communication is far more common than most people believe it to be.
Oh, it is. And it can be in dreams.
And certainly in dreams.
Or it could be in a book falling off a shelf.
Yes.
Or finding something that has been missing for a long time.
Yes.
That seems to just pop up in front of your little nose.
That's right.
In many ways, we have that. In many, many ways, we have that. Or even the smell of perfume in the air.
Yes, well, I certainly experienced, you know, a lot of those things with my own mother's passing.
Yeah, my mother was crazy about roses.
And
occasionally I'll suddenly smell, in the dead of winter, the scent of roses in the air.
Yes.
You know, and of course others say it's the scent of roses are affiliated with angels or with Mary. But for me, Mary being, you know, the mother of the Son of God, but for me it reminds me of my mother.
Well, that's right. It is the mother emblem rather than one particular mother. So I think it is a very important thing for people to remember who are in the grieving process. That,
absolutely. But, you know, after 2 or 3 years, we grow. And yes, even after 2 or 3 years, I'd puddle up. And even now, if I'm particularly sensitive, though it's going on 9 years, you know, I still, you know, wish that I had her back in my life. But I also know that to want her back in the physical wouldn't be conducive. It would not be helpful for her or me.
And I think, again, you know, we are talking about the only thing that we are certain in life. We can't take blame or upset for it, because it is a natural part of the life cycle that we are all going to experience.
Yes, at one time or another. I know just before my mother died, she started calling me mother. She'd say something and say mother. And that gave me to understand that her mother was around her. This was just within 24 hours of her death. And she had never in her life called me mother before. And I kind of, you know, felt a clutch when I heard that. But with my father, it was several days before his death. And he was in the hospital. And he had had a stroke, so his speech was not clear. But he started talking about his gesturing to his friends, and I saw his friends in the upper portion of the room, and I told him who I saw, because everybody else was trying to calm him down, and I knew he was seeing his friends and his relatives who were gathering to help him cross over. And that is a common phenomenon.
It is a common phenomenon, and you touched on something that I wrote about in the book, which is that often when somebody describes something like this, and they are in the dying process, relatives may dismiss what they're saying or think that they're hallucinations.
Right.
But in actual fact, you know, a lot of research has gone on into deathbed visions, and hospice workers often themselves, as you did, see the same visions.
Right.
That definitely somebody seems to come to escort the dying person, and going back in time, Jesus supposedly came to Mary a few hours before her death to tell her that he would return to accompany her at the moment of her death. So there's a lot of information, again, going back, reconnecting us with this idea that these sort of things have gone on since time immemorial, and that, again, there's something very comforting and very incredible, you know, if we stop and we take notice. Certainly my mother herself did have these kind of visitations, and I talked with her about them, and she was very animated, even through her, you know, final illness, which was very debilitating, and very enthusiastic, telling me about these visitors and that they were going to take her to a beautiful house and garden. She could go any time. And so this is something else that people can be aware of, and perhaps if it if they're in that situation, they might like to look at that in a slightly different way.
Well, I think it's a blessing, because you know that we do not cross alone. We simply don't. There are, as to the best of my knowledge, there are those loved ones whom we have known in our lifetime, and those that we haven't seen since we were on the other side and came, left there to come into birth in this lifetime. And the continuity and the verification that there is this continuity of life, and the joy of greeting people and knowing that it is just simply a step we go through. That's all it is. It's like moving from one room to another, or moving down to down the street or to a different house, because all it is a change of consciousness. We don't understand that, I think, many times, is death is simply a change in consciousness, not the loss of it.
I think that's a very good point. I think part of the reason that death and dying is such a taboo almost subject in Western contemporary cultures is because we have lost that connection. And again, you know, in the book I sort of detail the fact that if we just look into the natural world, we have examples of life, death and rebirth around us all the time.
Oh, certainly. The seasons themselves.
Seasons, vegetation.
Plants. Yes.
The sun rises in the morning, sets at night, the moon. And, you know, for many ancient cultures who lived in very close harmony with these natural rhythms, they just saw themselves in the same light. If that happened to everything around them, then it must happen to them.
Well, I think many people have a fear of not being in control, and they perceive as death as being outside, you know, something that they cannot control and want to try and control, which kind of isn't good, because if everybody always lived, we'd have a heck of an earth.
Well, we certainly would.
We'd have a real, real tough problem. And you talk about an elder population, my dear, you have no clue. So there is a reason and for everyone moving forward and in this lifespan. And, you know, where would be the growing of the trees if they didn't slumber each year? Or fruit if it never took time to blossom? And then die with the fruit, actually, which contains, what, the seeds of life for the next life for that particular genre. So, yes, you're absolutely right. It's in everything. It's normal. But, again, we look at things as we should control it and guide it. And carried to the extreme, you can realize how ridiculous it is. But we often don't stop and look at how important it is to have death in order that we may have life.
Yes, the two are inextricably linked.
Mm-hmm. Because you can't have life unless there is something yet again, as we say. On your journey, my dear, this took you a little while to get this book out. But you have learned, what did you learn most about it, and where do you want to go from here with your life and as things are growing for you from this wonderful journey that you took?
Well, I think as far as what I'm going to do with it, I will carry on writing, and that's, you know, what I love to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very interested in this whole idea of, you know, what is it that can help us expand
mm-hmm.
our consciousness? Obviously, the near-death experience and death are two of those places that certainly shake
mm-hmm.
us up and wake us up, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
But also there are lots of, you know, other experiences, perhaps not quite as extreme, that
mm-hmm.
we can still access that same kind of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what I'm interested in. And
mm-hmm.
I think as far as what I personally came away from that experience was that I do believe in a continuum of consciousness following physical death. How that would actually look, obviously, you know, I couldn't say for certain
mm-hmm.
that I have that belief.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this whole idea of embracing death in order to understand what life is really about
mm-hmm.
is the thing that I came away with that was most clear to me, that in death everything is stripped away that's unimportant.
Yeah, and it's made so that you can have more life.
Yes.
And a newer life and rebirth, because when we leave this world, we are literally being reborn into another world. And that's what people don't understand, is we have the right to continue on with life and to love. And we have to set aside the old in order to wear the new. I mean, how many pairs of pants can you wear at one time?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you cannot be, it's very difficult to try and figure out how to be in umpty-dump places at the same time and to give due measure to each life that you live. It's important to just set aside one life in order to pick up another. It's how we got born in the first place. At some point, we had to leave our bodies that had been born before in order that we could again have another life. And hence grow more and more. So, you know, measured that way, having life again is such a gift, because we know we're going to see each other again. There's no question about that.
Oh, I think so. And I think perhaps we have a greater appreciation for that, you know, a greater appreciation
mm-hmm.
for life, and that there are infinite possibilities
mm-hmm.
to our life. I think we get very bogged down with this idea of, we look around us, like I, you know, was saying earlier
mm-hmm.
in Larry's story, you know, money,
mm-hmm.
fame, power,
mm-hmm.
doesn't really do it, but for many people, it fends off the anxiety.
Many people, you know, they think that this is what life is, getting money. And they forget that, well, many people, when they achieve money, aren't satisfied, because then they need to have another goal to get more.
Mm-hmm.
And so they continue on this cycle of more, needs more, needs more. And they are never really at peace.
No, I think that's a very important part. Of course, there's nothing wrong with making enough money to live on
We're not talking, I think, about making money.
I just wanted to make that point, though. I'm not suggesting that people shouldn't be wanting to make a living
absolutely.
Or something like that. But I think that, you know, we live often in a concrete-based world,
mm-hmm.
and that we fail to remember sometimes that I think I may have mentioned this to you in a conversation we had previously,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, when the astronauts went up in space and looked back to Earth, one of them actually commented on the fact that looking back at the Earth and seeing this fragile, round globe just suspended
mm-hmm.
in space, in infinite space,
right.
just suddenly changed his whole perspective altogether.
Right. Right.
And I think that for anyone, last night there was an eclipse of the moon and many people
wonderful.
Were out there
yes.
watching that we only have to look around us to actually
right.
get a whole different perspective of what's
exactly.
going on, that we are actually this little ball floating around in infinite space and time.
Mm-hmm.
And that
mm-hmm.
alone can expand our awareness of the fact that there might be something else going on rather
right.
than what we think in our day-to-day life. And it's,
mm-hmm.
it's that connection we need to make again.
It's, yeah, it's very important. It's there's a song playing in the background of my mind. I can't quite guess it. I think it is about this world of ours. And I think it's by Jimmy Buffett, but I can't remember what it is. But it's one of the songs he wrote that I'm thinking of, and about how tiny this world of ours is after all, and how fragile it is. And so he brought up that very, very tune. And the words, and I've always thought that was almost mystical of him in the album that I got. And it's a fascinating, fascinating concept. If other people have had near-death experiences or have been with their family loved ones at a point of death, please feel free to come in and share your stories, because it's in sharing of these stories that we do indeed get to bring about some of our own healing and comfort. And I think that's a very important place to be in. It's very hard when you are grieving not to. You get stuck into your own space of pain and suffering, and opening up and sharing with others and looking back over one's life. This is important. I knew a young man. Oh, he's young now. He's not that young. not so young now. His fiance had died, and it was a juvenile onset diabetes that she just went down very, very fast. And he was grieving for her. And he was at the cemetery and was just standing there when all of a sudden a white feather just floated down right in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And for him, that kind, because she loved white birds, I think. And for him, that was her saying, "I'm still here. Don't mourn me." And it helped him immeasurably to get over his grief at that time. But you know, those are the types of things that you can look for.
Oh, very much so. And I think
yes.
they happen
mm-hmm.
very frequently if we pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
Often, as you say, the person wants to assure the one left behind
mm-hmm.
that they are still there.
And they still care. And they still love.
Yes.
Because loving doesn't change once you go across. I think mourning can make things difficult for both of you. Excessive mourning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it holds you in space. And then and my feeling is also it causes grief in the person who has gone, too. Although you don't have grief in the same way we understand grief. Because the emotional impact is not there when you're not in body. But that there is definitely a feeling of sadness, I guess, shall we say, that those who are left behind are mourning so much.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, the greatest gift someone can give is a little nudge, as I call it, to let you know that everything's okay and, hey, let's go back and get online. And all we want when you pass through the other side really is your happiness.
Yes, I think that's a very important and, you know, very inspirational thing for people to really understand, that often a deceased person will come and will make their presence felt in some way. And the last section of my book is actually people who have had some sort of after-death communication of one type or another. And I certainly did myself when my mother finally made her own transition. And I think, again, that we need to believe in the things that we experience.
Oh, yes.
My question often to people when they are very dubious about any of the sorts of things that we've been talking about is to say to them, you know, have you ever in your life had an experience that you can't actually rationally explain, something that has stayed with you and given you that idea that something else is going on? And I haven't yet met a person, whether they're agnostic or atheist
or
believers,
or hottentot,
who's actually said, no, they haven't. And so all I would say was, well, if you've had that for yourself, that obviously has given you the idea that there must be something else going on, and that perhaps is enough just to explore, you know, our, the things that happen to us, which give us this idea that something else, in fact, is going on.
Well, the other thing that is brought out, and one sees this from time to time, is the scientific community trying to say that what we feel is psychic, and I use psychic in the term of extra paranormal rather than any kind of woo-woo stuff or readings. But my feeling is that they're trying to say it's just it's really chemical, it's all a part of the brain, you know, and it has nothing to do, it has all to do with chemicals and nothing to do with, shall we say, reality, or there actually being life after death. And I'm thinking, you know, how very fuzzy of them. Because if you didn't have a mind, it wouldn't be there anyway, you know, you wouldn't care if it were not there. And it is a part of, and they talk about it, well, it's our fear of death, and we're trying to hold on to life, yada, 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 so forth and so on. And it's amazing how people can try to take science and wrap it around. I'm not saying that people haven't tried to take psychic phenomena and throw science out, but that's not quite the same thing. It's not just chemicals and neurons and synapses and nerve endings. It is real-time experiences. I mean, how do you know if you see something? If you can only pick and choose what you want to, then you've got a really poor life, you know? And I don't think that's what people mean. Have you ever seen What the Bleep Do I Know?
I have.
Isn't that interesting? And that speaks also to science reaching out and saying there's more than meets the eye.
Oh, certainly. And as I said before, I think we have testimony to that, you know, around us all the time. It's really, and a lot of scientists, to be fair, I mean, there's a lot of research going on in, you know, places like Arizona University and others, where people are really trying to experiment and find ways to possibly prove that some of these things are true in the concrete scientific sense. But again, like you say, we are talking about perceptions, really, and what we know that we have experienced ourselves. So at the end of the day, scientists may tell us that brain chemicals change at the moment of death or during a near-death experience or whatever, but they still can't tell us what else is going on.
Right, and it's not just a hallucination due to a brain fart, shall we say. Well, yeah, the other thing is, I was going to say something, and you know it's gone. I'm having a senior moment, forgive me.
All right.
I tend to get them more and more as time goes on, I think. Yeah, there was something today about there was something in the news recently about this type of research that's going on. Yeah, I know it is. We don't have yet the parameters or the technical expertise to test a lot of what they're trying to test. We're trying to use equipment using current scientific modes of information to test something that's outside. We're trying to use reality-based or third-dimensional measuring sticks to measure something that is beyond the five senses. And as a result, we cannot test it because we don't have the equipment, shall we say, to perform these tests. And I think that's a lot of the problem.
Yes, I think also, you know, it might be helpful for people. Certainly, I've put as much of information as I can in my book, Amongst the Stories, which is the fact that there are all sorts of ancient sacred texts, even murals, that have been discovered that certainly seem to suggest that, you know, this isn't a new phenomenon.
No, it's not.
Near-death experiences, after-death communication is something that's been recorded through the ages. Plato, for example, closed the Republic with the myth of who was a soldier that was killed in the battlefield and then came back to life. You know, we have Lazarus, resurrected by Jesus. We have all sorts of accounts. We have the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the Tibetan Book of the Dead. We have a lot of information, and I propose that it may be that we had this initial understanding.
Oh, yes.
And as mankind or womankind or...
you don't have to be politically correct on this show. we understand the generic.
as we've evolved in one way, we really have lost touch with this perhaps inner knowing that we have, and that every time we have some kind of occurrence that happens, maybe like a near-death experience, deathbed vision, some psychic phenomena. In a sense, they're all the same thing.
Yes,
we're penetrating that chink in the curtain that's been sort of tightly drawn.
Exactly.
And reconnecting with that ancient wisdom. So perhaps it might be comforting for people not to think of investigating to find something new, but rediscovering something old, and that something old actually is within us, every single one of us, and that's why every now and then, or more for some people than others, we actually have things that happen that sort of confirms that to us.
Yes, and when our ancestors were here, I believe that they were in their less sophisticated state, more open to accepting unusual phenomena without fear and without a lot of brouhaha, because as you mentioned, it's written down, but you understand that with each generation, they try to say, oh, well, you know, and you do it, you know, you look at your parents as though they are old fogies, and what do they know? And it isn't until you really get out into the real world and you find out, well, they kind of knew more than we thought they knew at the time, that you realize that something old is new again. And as I said, a lot of times there is this concept that, that perhaps we don't know as well as our ancestors did how to live with this phenomena graciously. And at some point we considered death something to be fought rather than to be acknowledged and honored.
Well, I think you've made another, you know, really valid point. There used to be rituals in the household, you know, a person of it, often died at home, surrounded by the family. Less than 100 years ago, people were far more acquainted with death mm-hmm. and dying. It was a, you know, childhood illnesses, mm-hmm. shorter lifespans. So it was accepted. People had rituals around death and mm-hmm. mourning, the mourning process. Mm-hmm. Victorians wore armbands to signify mm-hmm. that there was some mourning going on.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas
mm-hmm.
now we tend to try and
dust it and put it away
ignore,
as quickly as possible.
You know,
yeah.
and I think it's very difficult for people who are bereaved when mm-hmm. friends or relatives think that the best course of action is never to mention the person who's died's name.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, it's far more comforting mm-hmm. for the person to
yes,
be
to
able
them.
To discuss and remember
yes.
their
yes.
loved one.
Oh, absolutely, and I agree with you on that. It's because people are embarrassed, I think, and they are afraid of saying something and so anything to hurt another person, and so they don't say anything, which is, you know, almost as bad, because then it's like the person never lived or didn't matter. And, you know, it's better to just offer comfort, even just a silent arm around the shoulder, or, you know, offering to do dishes or just take somebody out for a dinner or something small. You know, just something, and even if people turn away, just to understand that sometimes one has to be left alone with the sorrow, but not left completely alone, if that makes sense.
Yes, sorry.
And it's life itself is such an ecstatically beautiful gift. It's too bad most of us don't live a little bit more in the moment when we have the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But the near-death experiences have changed you, and I think that you are looking forward in your life to following this path, are you not, down the road where it leads, perhaps doing more research and learning and maybe even coming up with yourself some guidelines and parameters to explore how to prove that there's life after death and there's a continuity of consciousness.
Well, certainly that is what I'm interested in, yes. I think it's a very fascinating subject, and I also think it's a subject that you can never run out of material.
As long as we
always,
keep living and breathing.
Yeah, and there's always a very receptive audience
mm-hmm.
wanting answers.
Yes.
So I think everybody, you know, whether we pretend or ignore or deny, we're always looking for answers about the meaning of life and,
mm-hmm.
and what this life means and what death and transitioning from this world means and whether we are going to continue in some form. So
mm-hmm.
it's as you said, it's not a scientific proven formula.
Right, not yet.
And
that's what we're seeking is how
we're
to prove
seeking
it.
And mm-hmm. the closest thing we have at the moment is the near-death experience.
Anecdotal.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see. I was going to say part of what can be done for comforting is grief counseling, okay, talking with other people
mm-hmm.
and sharing your story. Cutting yourself away or hiding yourself away isn't what's going to help you in the long run. It's sharing with other people and acknowledging that you miss the physicality of them. But you know, sometimes if you become more aware, the communion of minds that you can have with them can be as strong, if not stronger, than when you were alive.
I think that's very much, that's very true, that obviously, you know, to begin with, grief is numbing.
Yes.
And quite rightly so, because loss is traumatic and huge to
mm-hmm.
lose someone. And I include pets or anything
oh, yes.
that
oh, yes.
we lose that we're very close to. It's a very painful physical wrench. And during our lives, we all encounter it at one time or another. But
mm-hmm.
I also think that grief, you know, is one of the ultimate emotions, perhaps as strong as love, and that it
mm-hmm.
does, as we go through grief, rearrange
mm-hmm.
us in some way.
Mm-hmm.
and that to really truly grieve and to allow ourselves, which again in society nowadays people aren't allowed to grieve, you know, come on, pull yourself together.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when a great aunt of mine who I really was very close to died, and I was talking about her a couple of weeks later, and a friend was there who actually said to me, "Oh, you're not still talking about her, are you?"
Are
you
they,
know, because it
made
them feel
uncomfortable. Yes,
and that, you know, we actually need to try and
yes.
allow people all their processes and,
mm-hmm.
and to try and expand our own understanding so that not only can we help other people, but
mm-hmm.
we can help ourselves and we can appreciate life more as a consequence. We can be more authentically human.
Yes. Well, that's why I suggested grief counseling to this young woman, because
mm-hmm.
it is fairly obvious that she's holding on to guilt, which is preventing her from moving forward in her life. And she, you know, grief counseling, I think, would help people. I had some counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, any time you lose, there is that physical issue. And also, by the way, when you grieve, your immune system is depressed, and you become much more open to illnesses.
Yeah.
You become, many people who grieve go through, can get, you know, bronchitis, pneumonia, heart attack, because it acts negatively on your body. And this is not honoring your body and taking care of yourself, which is what you're supposed to do. I mean, your body is a great gift, and it's important to take care of it and respect it. But, you know, understanding that, I can understand great grief. But you can become so much sort of like Queen Victoria, who spent most of the rest of her life running around in black and, you know, mourning excessively. And her empire suffered as a result because she didn't pay attention to what was going around and her job, which was being queen. But she did grieve. And she did eventually, you know, recover some of it. But still, one has an obligation to take care of oneself. And certainly I think it's important to acknowledge that we do grieve and to ask others to participate with us in our process. And I think that can be done respectfully. But many people tend to forget and abuse their own body by staying in a state of grief for so long that they can indeed do serious and permanent damage to their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't realize that. You know, and not until I started reading about it and went through it myself did I really understand it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's an experience that we have to go through. And again, it's part of life. Because without loss, we cannot have gain. As I said, if nobody ever died, I don't think we'd have enough square inches on this earth to have life itself, to be honest with you.
Well, that's true.
You know, we'd be hard up and looking for places to live in space rather than on this earth plane, because all the graveyards would not be full, and there would be a standing room only on this earth plane, and I don't think that would make much of a life for us. But some of the other things that, you know, please share with us again. We don't have much time. Please, you know, give your name and the book again and where it can be purchased, and your phone number if you so choose, where people can contact you. And then, you know, just kind of give us a last-minute thought on what you would like to leave people thinking.
Okay, well, the book is Practicing Conscious Living and Dying. It's published by O Books, and it's available from any good bookstore or online at Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or any of the other online book sellers. If people do want to get in touch with me at all, they can email me at Anna Maria Hemingway. That's A-N-N-A-M-A-R-I-A-H-E-M annamariahemingway@gmail.com. So that's annamariahemingway@gmail.com. I have a website, www.practicingconsciousliving.com, that will give full details of the book, and also you can see reviews and endorsements.
Okay.
So if anyone wants further information, they can see on the website or on some of the Amazon pages. And I think the thought that I'd like to leave people with is that, like all things in life, death holds something very sacred and profound. We have talked a lot about grieving and death and dying and loss, but the object of this book is not to deny those facts, but also to illustrate that death can bring transformation and
mm-hmm.
inspiration. I think these stories are powerful and
mm-hmm.
perhaps will help people expand their knowledge
mm-hmm.
around death and the dying process.
Okay.
And I think that's it.
Oh, wonderful. I know I enjoyed reading your book very much, and I found it very informative. And I am so glad that you agreed to come on the show and to talk about it. I know it's a dear thought close to your heart and something that you wish to share. And in your own way, reach out and help the earth heal and others heal through your experiences and your stories. And I appreciate that. Again, I'm Phyllis Pricer. You've been listening to The Higher Dimension. And I look forward to talking to you again someday, Anna Maria. And again, I do appreciate so much your taking time and sharing. It's been a blessed event for us. And I wish you the very, very best.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. I enjoyed it. I hope it's been helpful to people. And
I think it was. I think so. I think it was one of those subjects where it's given a lot of thought for people, and that's what it's meant to be. God bless and good night.
Good night.